For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte is hailing a convincing victory in the Netherlands election. His VDD party easily beat the anti-immigration, anti-Islam party of Geert Wilders. Police have arrested a 17-year-old boy in Grasse in southern France after at least two people were hurt in a shooting at a school. It's reported the boy was armed with three guns and two grenades and apparently aimed the attack at the head teacher at Tocqueville High School, where he was a student. A letter bombs exploded and injured one person at the IMF in Paris. It comes the day after the German finance ministry in Berlin intercepted a parcel bomb sent to the finance minister Wolfgang Schäuble. Elena Casas reports.
Roads around the IMF's Europe headquarters in Paris have been sealed off by police after a letter bomb injured one member of staff. It comes the day after the German finance ministry in Berlin intercepted a parcel bomb before it exploded. A Greek far-left group, the Conspiracy of Fire Cells, claimed responsibility for that package on its website. Greece's international creditors, including Germany and the IMF, are in the process of demanding more austerity measures from Greece in exchange for a bailout payment Greece needs by mid-July.
NATO member Turkey says it's in talks with Russia to buy an anti-air defence system, as Jack Parrott reports.
The Turkish government says they're taking steps to purchase a Russian-made S-400 anti-aircraft missile system, but are not yet at the point where they can sign a deal. A Kremlin spokesperson confirmed that Russian President Vladimir Putin and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan have spoken directly about the purchase. With relations between NATO and Russia remaining frosty after the annexation of Crimea, it's a move which will be of deep concern to the alliance, which backed its member Turkey when the Turkish Air Force downed a Russian fighter jet for entering its airspace back in November 2015.
US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says he's willing to accept the challenge of cutting the US State Department's budget by 28%. US correspondent Priscilla Huff has more from Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson remains confident American diplomats and State Department employees will be more effective than ever. But he indicated to reporters in Tokyo that while the level of spending is unsustainable, the level of budget cuts may also depend on global events beyond their control, including fewer international conflicts and more global partners pitching in. For Secretary Tillerson, he says a comprehensive review of programs is underway. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
Federal judges in Hawaii and now Maryland have blocked U.S. President Donald Trump's new travel ban due to take effect on Friday. They questioned the legality of the ban, which would have placed a 90-day bar on people from six mainly Muslim nations. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett, and a warm welcome to the program to you. I hope you're well. It is a Thursday. It's the 16th, I think. It is the 16th of March, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. I've got a very interesting show lined up for you. You may tweet me from now on the handle at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Let's have a chat, you and I.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And as always, thank you for joining me. Thank you indeed. The Virginia State Senator Richard Black joins me this hour. I said today, and I meant it, he's a lone voice in U.S. politics. He challenges the mainstream narrative about Syria. In fact, he was in Syria last year, met Bashar al-Assad. He's also questioned Turkey's role in the conflict, whatever you want to describe it as. What are Turkey doing? Does Turkey want a piece of Syria in the event that it's sorted out the way the NATO alliance wants it sorted? What is Turkey doing in Syria? Richard Black joins me this hour. And in the second hour, Tommy Sheridan joins me. Now, Tommy is going to chat about the calls for a second Scottish independence referendum, the European Union, Press Freedom, Rupert Murdoch, and more. I have a lot of time for Tommy Sheridan. He joins me in the second hour. So good old show lined up for you this Thursday. And you are listening on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com, TuneIn Radio, of course, as well. Been hearing from David. He's in Slovenia, where he will be talking on Saturday for the best part of 12 hours. He's having a terrific time there, by all accounts. He's been very well received, and he's done a number of interviews with national media, and those interviews have gone very well. They've been very, very respectful of his presence there, and they're very interested in what he has to say. That's not always been the case when David and the team have rocked up to various cities around the world, so it's a refreshing change. And, you know, it might be indicative that change is here. Maybe it is. I know it's a very cliched political thing to say, but maybe that is indicative, maybe in Eastern Europe, that people are tired of the same old narrative. And David, of course, is not delivering the same old narrative. He's challenging that narrative and asking questions of that narrative. So I'm delighted it's going so well for them in Slovenia. Check out the worldwidewakeup.com for details of where David and the team will be in 2017. All righty. So it's been a mad old afternoon. So it's not that I haven't prepared anything for the monologue. I'm always prepared. But I don't know really where to start. So much is going on that is of interest to us. The US Senate panel has just said, has just announced, that there are no indications that Donald Trump's Trump Tower was indeed the subject of surveillance. Now, that doesn't mean they're right or they're telling the truth. I don't know. You know, I don't know. But that's what they're saying. You heard at the top of the hour, the incumbent Mark Rutte carried the day in the Dutch general election. Apparently, European leaders are chuffed to bits about that. They're thrilled. They couldn't wait to get in front of the press today. Angela Merkel and other European, pro-EU European leaders, delighted, said this was a vote for stability and it was a great day for the European Union. So that went on yesterday. I did mention, didn't I, in the monologue yesterday, and I was right to say it, by the way, that when there is such a high turnout in an election, it usually means doom or at least bad news for the incumbent. A very high turnout is often indicative of dissatisfaction amongst the electorate. Well, it didn't work out like that yesterday. Geert Wilders' party made some ground. The PVV party made some ground on their previous showing back in 2012. But the incumbent Rutte, the pro-European centrist guy, he carried the day. Now, Francois Hollande in France, he's saying, well, that's a good thing for us. It means that we need not be so worried by the rise of support for Marine Le Pen and the anti-EU, anti-immigrant supporters of Marine Le Pen. We'll have to wait and see in the French election. Does it matter a damn? I don't know. You know what I say about elections and democracy, so I don't know, but I'm just telling you. In case you've been working all day, dear listener, and you're not privy to some of this information, I'm just letting you know. Big scandal, allegedly, brewing here in the UK about the Conservative Party and electoral spending. I might tell you more about that in a minute. It's approaching 9 minutes past the hour. But a big story broke in France earlier today. And that is a 17-year-old opened fire at Tocqueville High School in Grasse around about 11:40 UK time, which means 12:40, of course, there in France. Now, this is a really bizarre story. I don't know what to make of it. I've not been spending much time this afternoon on social media, so I don't really know what others are saying about it. I'm sure the false flag brigade, you know, the people who rush to social media to proclaim everything a false flag, I'm sure they've been tweeting and blogging and all the rest of it. But it is a bizarre story. Allegedly, a 17-year-old suspect walked into a school and on his person he had a rifle, two handguns and two grenades. And he managed to wound three students and a head teacher, but not life-threateningly wound. He didn't wound them in a way in which, you know, their lives are in any danger. That's weird, isn't it? Now, anti-terrorist commandos from the elite French raid force were sent to the scene. He didn't die, usually in these episodes. And I'm glad nobody died, by the way. I'm not being flippant here. I'm delighted that nobody died. He didn't die. Usually these lone wolf nuts usually kill themselves or are shot to death by the police. That didn't happen. He was arrested. And apparently, it's being said that it was a crazy act by a youth who is unstable and fascinated by guns. Now, I swear on all that's sacred, I'm not in the habit of making things up to suit my own agenda or my own opinions, but nobody today on British national media, I swear nobody was asking the question, how did a 17-year-old kid get a rifle, two handguns and two grenades? Number one. And a kid as motivated as he allegedly was to acquire such lethal hardware, how did he completely balls the job up and manage to, thankfully, only wound the students and the head teacher? None of that makes much sense, does it? There was also talk at the beginning of this event of a second shooter. This is often the case, but that's been ruled out by the police, but not by the raid people, if you understand. The anti-terror squad are saying, well, there might have been a second shooter. The police are saying, well, it was just confusion. There's only one guy. So, thankfully, nobody was killed. But that's a bizarre story. It just is bizarre. You know, not to say it isn't true, but it's bizarre. 12 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com, and TuneIn Radio as well. I know you'll have plenty of opinions on that. Now, the IMF. Again, this isn't funny. I don't find this funny at all. You probably heard in the news bulletin at the top of the year, Ollie Barrett there in London told you that a letter bomb exploded at the International Monetary Fund's office in Paris. The employee who opened the letter bomb was injured, but thankfully wasn't seriously hurt. The employee has hand and face injuries. Staff were evacuated. IMF Director Christine Lagarde said it was a cowardly act of violence against the staff of the IMF. Now, it is a cowardly act of violence. Okay? We've spoken a lot on this programme about the devastation and the economic genocide that has been inflicted on the Greek people. And you can understand any burning desire for revenge against the criminal institutions of the European Union. But violence is despicable and it's disgraceful, no matter who carries it out. Of course it is. But Lagarde calling it a cowardly act of violence, it is, and it's wrong. But you've destroyed Greece. You've destroyed it. There isn't any more eloquent way of putting that. The economic chaos that has been wreaked on Greece, inflicted on Greece, has caused misery on an unimaginable scale for most people. It really has. But it's wrong. Terrorism and violence is wrong, whoever the perpetrators of those acts happen to be. 14 minutes past the hour. Like I said, a lot going on today. And it was announced today then that... excuse me. Let me just bring that up there. I've lost the story. I don't want to be giving you information that is incorrect or inaccurate. I have my notes. Yes, but it's a big storm today, big storm in the UK about electoral misconduct by the Conservative Party in the run-up to the last general election. And what's interesting today is I don't have any sympathy for the mainstream media organisations in the United Kingdom. I certainly have no time for Rupert Murdoch, and we'll talk about Rupert Murdoch with Tommy Sheridan a bit later on, undoubtedly. No sympathy at all with the Murdoch empire. But it was interesting to see the Conservative Party chairman, Patrick McLoughlin, being asked questions on the streets of Westminster today by a Sky News reporter, obviously a Sky News reporter. And McLoughlin, the Conservative Party chairman, assaulted the reporter, smacked his hand and pushed a camera away from him. The Sky reporter was filming and asking him questions at the same time. Does this matter a damn? That there were spending discrepancies and laws broken, electoral rules broken by the Conservative Party in the run-up to the election? Probably not. It's been the focus of much of the hour's news bulletins today on BBC 24 and Sky News. I'm not going to tell you much more about that, really. So those are the big headlines then today. You can tweet this programme. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. richie@richieallen.co.uk. Let me know what you're thinking about any of the stories. Coming up in hour two, Tommy Sheridan joins me. And in a few minutes' time, Senator Richard Black will be on the line from Virginia. You don't want to miss him. In the meantime, though, I'm going to take a very quick break. Keep those tweets coming in. I will read a few when we get back. Quite a few tweets this early in the program. I'll read a few when we come back, and then we'll get Senator Richard Black on the program.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premilonpictures.co.uk.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Yeah, and of course I didn't mention, and I probably will bring it up with our first guest, Donald Trump's travel ban plans have been Well, they've hit a roadblock again, haven't they? We might talk about that in a couple of minutes. Right, I will read your tweets later on. We're pressed for time. Going to take some music and get our first guest on the programme. I think you're going to like listening to him. I really do. He is Senator Richard Black from Virginia. He'll be joining me live in a couple of minutes' time. This is your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Back with Senator Richard Black after this from Def Leppard. Broadcasting across the Northwest on Fab Radio and around the world on TuneIn Radio. This is your Richie Allen Show, 21 and a half minutes past the air. Thanks for all your tweets. I will read the tweets in the comments a bit later on. But first to our first guest today. Delighted he's on the programme. He is a distinguished Virginia State Senator and decorated veteran who flew helicopter missions in the Vietnam War and also served as a prosecutor with the U.S. Army Judge Advocate General's Corps. He later headed up the Army's Criminal Law Division at the Pentagon. Now, he got our attention last year when he travelled to Syria to meet President Bashar al-Assad. And importantly, he presented a vastly different picture of the Syrian situation to that which was presented by the mass media. Hugely important. Let's welcome to the programme Senator Richard Black. Senator, thank you for taking the call. How are you?
Well, thank you for having me, Richie. I'm doing great, and I appreciate everything that you're doing over there.
Well, thanks so much. You know, your resume is absolutely amazing. It's incredible, really. There's so many things we could talk about in the time that we have, but I'm going to stick with Syria. A wonderful thing you did last year, ignoring what you were being told, you know, irrespective of who was telling you, ignoring it and going out to Syria yourself. Tell us, Senator, what did you find when you arrived in Syria as opposed to what you might have expected to find?
Well, I had studied Syria intensively for about 6 years, and it all began with the unprovoked invasion of Libya. And I thought, what are we after? What are we trying to do? And that led to the fact that we were seizing the huge supply of military weapons in Libya in order to ship them to Turkey and then across the border into Syria, where we would send mercenaries and terrorists from around the globe, and we would train them, we would arm them to topple the Syrian government, which was very popular with the Syrian people. And so I knew that when I went in, but what I really had was confirmation from people, because they were telling me things that I knew already. And it always helps to double check your intelligence when you're doing this. But I did find that there is an overwhelming degree of support for President al-Assad, which was demonstrated by fair and free elections in 2014, which the West promptly disregarded as just not significant. And if you think of it, this is a country of 23 million people that has been attacked by two-thirds of of the world. All the world's great economic powers, except for China and Russia, have attacked them. NATO, the UK, the United States, France, all of the Gulf states have flooded jihadists. And yet here is a little country of 23 million that has stood by its president. He still travels around Syria with rather sparse security. It's a little bit frightening when you realize it. And he has the total support of the Syrian government, the Syrian army, and the Syrian people. And that's what I saw everywhere that I went. And one of the things that most offends Syrians is the way that Westerners parse the various terrorists and what we call them, this group and that group. Basically, what you have is two variations of Al-Qaeda. They both stem from Al-Qaeda, one being ISIS, one being the Al-Qaeda and all of its allied terrorists. But there are no moderates. That's a myth. It has always been a myth. This is a war of terrorism launched by the West and by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar against the sovereign, independent nation of Syria. If you think of it, after the Second World War, we hanged people on the Axis side for wars of aggression. And yet we're fostering wars of aggression all throughout the Middle East.
What was incredible to me was I mentioned earlier on, you're a decorated veteran. You are. You're a man of the law, an incredibly distinguished career. And yet, you getting that message out when you came back home, trying to tell people, listen, there is another side to what we're being told. There is something very wrong with the narrative. You weren't naive, Senator, because you've been around long enough, but you still must have been surprised at the vitriolic attacks on you by the national media in your country. Instead of engaging with you and saying, okay, Senator, well, sit down with us, tell us what you saw, give us an impression of this man, Assad, what you got was, you know, straight off the bat, condemnation, right?
Well, there is a deep state in the media, and the media are woven together. The British media, the French, the German, the American media, they all are centrally governed in some sense. And there was a decision made early on that we're going to take down various countries and that we will have a single unified narrative. Now, I sent a letter to President Assad in 2014. And it essentially said two things. They had just scored a great victory along the Kalamon mountain range that separates Lebanon and Syria. And they freed a great number of the Christian-oriented villages there. So I said two things. I said, first, thank you or thank the Syrian Arab Army for its gallant rescue of the Christians, especially the 13 nuns who were being held as human shields. And I said, secondly, I cannot explain to you why the United States, which lost 3,000 people killed on 9/11 when the Twin Towers collapsed and a plane crashed into the Pentagon, why we have now turned and become allied with Al-Qaeda, which carried out this heinous attack on the United States. There was a huge uproar of the international media. Every nation, it seemed, on the globe attacked me. But I told people in the office, I said, everybody who calls to attack us, I want to personally speak with them. And when I told them what the letter said, they didn't always entirely agree, but I tell you, they very quickly stopped calling because they knew that what do you say? We're protecting Christians and we're against being allied with Al-Qaeda. How can you argue with those two points?
Absolutely.
So that really began to break through the barrier, and now we have other voices, and of course people like you who are very influential who speak out and are beginning to break this this false narrative, this fake news about the Syrian war.
We're very lucky. Yeah, we have Syrian women, and we have a reporter in Beirut who comes on the program, and we, you know, we ask the questions that the mainstream media should ask. We don't give people, you know, an easy ride all the time. But thanks for saying that. There's a couple of things I want to talk about. I want to talk about Turkey's motivation in the region. It's been announced today that Turkey might be buying an anti-aircraft defence system from Russia. Now, some people might think, well, that might not be a bad thing, because Russia might be able to influence Ankara. But I want to talk about, you know, Turkey and Turkey's interests in Syria in a second. But I'd like to ask you about your new president. I mean, it's been a roller coaster, and I know that's a cliche, but it's been a tumultuous period since the election, even before the inauguration. And a lot of people were very optimistic, Senator, by some of the things that Trump was saying pre the election. He said that, you know, the days of intervention should be over. We don't have the rights to be going into countries, sovereign states, and dictating what happens. These were all very good noises. Now, he's appointed some people recently that definitely don't have a favourable opinion of Russia. And that's caused concern. And there's concern that maybe he's changing his stance on interventionism, Trump. Where is Trump on Syria? I mean, I know we don't have all night, and I wanted to ask you about, you know, is there a stalemate in Syria right now and what's happening? We don't have all the time in the world, but let's talk about Trump for a minute. Good or a bad thing for the situation in Syria?
Well, the, you know, with Syria, I think Trump has been fairly clear that he is not for regime change. I think he understands that regime change is it's a decision of either having a puppet government run by Wahhabists supported by Saudi Arabia, or you're going to have President Assad. It's going to be one of the two, and I think he understands that. You have to realize that President Trump is combating the deep state, the intelligence agencies that constantly are leaking information and undermining everything that he's doing. You would like to think that the people elect a president, the president implements policies. But for example, just recently, you had Senator John McCain blasting Senator Rand Paul. Now, John McCain is one of the most bellicose people on earth. I don't know why he hasn't urged us to declare war on Ireland, Iceland. Or perhaps the UK. There is no war he doesn't love, and he got tremendously angry at Rand Paul because Rand Paul cast a vote against bringing Montenegro into the NATO. Well, Montenegro has an army of less than 2,000 people, and the country's only been in existence for 11 years, and it's simply another move towards the borders of Russia. Russia had, with the fall of the Berlin Wall, they had decided, you know, we want a new way and a new day, and we want to be a part of the European experience. And because they collapsed the Warsaw Pact, and yet we kept in place NATO. Well, NATO ever since has been looking for excuses for their high pay and their good jobs. And the excuse has been that Russia is somehow this demon that threatens everyone. Well, it's foolishness. There's no substance to it, whatever. But yet they're on this path towards an eventual war with Russia.
Now, how dangerous is that, Senator? Is that a possibility, that? Do you see that as a genuine possibility further down the road if things continue the way they're going?
I really do. And, you know, I've been a military man most of my adult life, and I've watched wars don't suddenly just spark off. Typically, they are planned well in advance, and then you diplomatically create events and so forth to move them forward. Now, at the end of the Cold War, we made firm commitments to the Soviet Union that we would not move NATO one inch to the east. And now here in successive waves, we've moved it further and further. And this great buffer that we had between the two nuclear powers when the Berlin Wall fell, now it's closing. And we risk a situation where once again, we are toe-to-toe, two nuclear powers in a very tense situation where some inadvertent act could spark a thermonuclear war. There are people, the global elite, the boys from Davos, Switzerland, who gather and pontificate, they literally are willing to risk a third world war that involves thermonuclear destruction.
Senator, let me jump in there and forgive the interruption. This is a very important question, I think. You might think it's ludicrous, but I'll ask you anyway. This global elite and the cowboys in Davos, Switzerland, do they want this war?
Yes, they do.
They want it.
You have to realize that the global elite feeds off of war. And you look at Barack Obama's eight-year presidency. He was given the Nobel Peace Prize when he first assumed office on the belief that he was going to bring nirvana, and yet he's the only president we've ever had who has had uninterrupted combat throughout his entire 8 years of service in office. And I think what you see, you know, the war against Libya was deliberately done to capture weapons, to feed the war in Syria. And also, Libya was a very financially responsible country that had 140 tons of gold, huge cash reserves, and all of that was plundered. Now, some people would like to tell you, oh, well, this was taken by those nasty rebels. Well, wait a minute. I thought these were great Democrats that we were supporting, not nasty rebel. And I don't think the rebels got the bulk of that cash and the bulk of that gold. I suspect that there are high-ranking officials from the United States, the UK, and France who have taken that gold and that enormous quantity of cash and converted it to Swiss bank accounts.
We have Senator Richard Black on the line. You can follow him on Twitter. I've already tweeted out his Twitter handle. Follow him there, @SenRichardBlack, @SenRichardBlack. We've got the Senator for another 10 minutes. He's busy. This is important stuff, folks. This is the reason why we broke away from commercial media to do programs like this, to speak with learned men who's seen combat up close and personal, who's worked as a lawyer, who's serving in the Virginia State Senate, who's telling it the way it is. It's vitally important that this information gets shared in the absence of the mainstream media coverage of this information. I mean, Senator, I saw you on RT speaking a few weeks back about Turkey's intentions for Syria, and I thought you were brilliant, and I thought, this is great. This man is making assertions, but he's backing them up with facts. These are genuine opinions. And the tragedy of it was, you know, not everybody in the UK has access to RT. They get their information from the BBC and Sky News. And I thought the tragedy is, while people are seeing this, nowhere near enough people are seeing it. Tell us about Turkey. I mean, you spoke at great length about Turkey trading in oil and buying oil from these lunatic Wahhabi jihadists. You were so right on that. You think that Turkey wants to take a piece of Syria in a post, conflict, in a post Syrian conflict world. Tell us about that and the Turkish intentions.
Yes, Turkey has invaded Syria and it has invaded Iraq. And both of these are unlawful wars of aggression. And there's now an effort, and it's interesting, I think the United States is actually trying to bottle up this incursion. It's, if you can imagine, a line that separates Turkey on the north and then Iraq and Syria on the south, and then a bulge, a sort of semicircular bulge going into Syria. They have a major military incursion. I read a report the other day that they had seized some additional Syrian villages, ordered the people to join the war against their country, and when some of them refused, they simply shot them to death. You need to recognize, and you know, one of the big stories you might want to do, the Turkish constitution is on the verge of being changed, and it's going to make Erdogan an absolute dictator. In fact, he said in the lead up to this that he wanted powers similar to those of Adolf Hitler, and he will achieve these. There's going to be a referendum, but it's sort of predetermined that he's going to win. He actually will control the majority of their high court. He appoints cabinet members without confirmation. He can dissolve the National Assembly at will. It turns the National Assembly into a mere advisory body. He can declare states of emergency, and it abolishes all checks and balances. So Turkey will become an absolute dictatorship, much like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, our other two allies. And so you just have to wonder, what are we doing with them in NATO, where we have guaranteed that we'll defend their borders against attack from others, and yet it's an absolute dictatorship, powers like Adolf Hitler, totally has abolished press freedom, has perhaps 100,000 political prisoners in inhuman conditions. It's slaughtering the Kurdish people, and it's invaded its neighbors. What are we doing committing the West to wholeheartedly supporting someone who really poses an existential threat to Western Europe?
And ironically, Senator, these are the things that Assad was accused of. And I very dispassionately looked at Assad when this began back in 2011. And I had a long, hard look back. And being a geopolitical journalist anyway, I knew that Assad was a very reluctant president. He got the job, of course, because of the death of his brother. And I knew that he wanted to reform Syria, and he was desperately keen to do that. Not only that, but the United Nations were constantly patting him on the back, saying he was achieving all these goals. It was a wonderful thing. How ironic that the very things he was accused of doing are going on in Turkey, not to mention the absolute wretched state that is the state of Saudi Arabia when it comes to human rights. And of course, you know better than anybody, Senator, this country, the United Kingdom, we co-opted Saudi Arabia onto the UN Human Rights Council. Do you sometimes think that you've fallen down a rabbit hole and that you'll wake up sometime in the next few hours and this will all be just a bad dream?
Well, it is remarkable. If you look at Saudi Arabia, we call them our great ally. I know Britain does also. And here they are, a country which is an absolute dictatorship. They call him a king, but you know, my advice, if I were an advisor to any dictator, I'd say, call yourself a king. People love kings.
Yeah.
But he's a dictator, and he has the power to behead people at will. Do you know that they didn't even take slavery off the books until 1962, and to this day, they have beheading and crucifixion as authorized punishments. Women cannot leave their homes without the permission and accompaniment of a male, sort of like somebody walking a dog, only I guess they can let their dogs loose to go out, but they can't let their women loose.
Yeah, yeah.
The women are slightly lower than dogs in the Saudi scheme of things. It is a pathetic, despicable country. The religious values. Now, I know Muslims who are moderate, But they do not come from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is Wahhabist, which is the most primitive, barbaric form of Islam, and they are promoting it around the globe, and it is coming. It's coming to Europe. It's coming to the United States. It's being spread everywhere, and along with Wahhabism comes terror. And so we've seen this utter explosion of global terrorism that relates back to the time that we began working with Saudi Arabia to use terrorism as a tool of global manipulation.
Can I ask you a question on that, Senator? This might sound very conspiratorial, but I'll ask it anyway. Because what you described there is basically how I see it. And, you know, this is also to the detriment of most of the ordinary Muslim men and women who just want to raise a family and get on with their lives like everybody else. Do you think, I mean, we spoke about the global elite and their plans for a protracted, serious thermonuclear conflict with Russia. Do you think that part of that plan, you know, because I agree with you, we see it here in some places in the UK. I can't deny that there are pockets of radical Islam in places. I don't like admitting it, but I can't deny it either. But I often see that as an intended consequence of the meddling in the affairs of these countries. And one of the benefactors of it is the global elite, because while we spend all our time on talk radio, on national talk radio, arguing about Muslims and the burqa and the veil and extremism and mosques, it's divide and conquer, isn't it, Senator? We hate one another, and they carry on doing what it is they do.
Well, there's a rule in politics that says nothing ever just happens on its own.
No.
If you go back to the origins of all of this, now I love Ronald Reagan. I thought he was a great president, but he made a terrible mistake when he armed the Mujahideen in Saudi Arabia with modern arms. This was the genesis of Al-Qaeda. And when that wasn't enough to overthrow the Soviet incursion into Afghanistan, he then accepted a proposal from the Saudi Arabians that they set up madrasas where they would train young Afghan boys, street urchins, and they would study nothing but Wahhabism day and night until they were just boiling over with hatred. And these were the people, these were the ones that eventually drove the Soviet Union from Afghanistan. But the problem is, it's the old story of Pandora's box. You can open the box to let some of the nasty creatures attack your opponent, but once they're free of the box, they go wherever they want. And when they're finished devouring your opponent, they turn and they devour you. And this is what has happened. What started with a handful of people in Afghanistan ballooned into a modest force in Afghanistan. And then when we began our policies of regime change with the so-called Arab Spring, which I think was a concoction of the intelligence agencies, when we did this, we have created an Al-Qaeda that is 1,000 times more powerful than it was when it left Afghanistan. It has roots in virtually every modern country on earth. And so there have been two very important pieces of legislation introduced in the U.S. Congress. The first was by Representative Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii, a very liberal Democrat, and she introduced the Stop Arming Terrorists Act. And then just recently, Senator Rand Paul, who was truly, truly a hero of the people, he introduced the same bill in the Senate.
Yeah, we saw John McCain's response to that, didn't we? John McCain, what an absolute madman.
The man is unhinged. I mean, he has always been a man of dubious intellect, But tremendous bombast, and he threatens and he bullies. He is a pathetic leader.
And he should know better, because like you, he served his country, you know, and he saw the other side of it. He saw the horrors of war, as you did, Senator, and he should know better.
He was also one of the few prisoners of war who recorded a propaganda piece for the North Vietnamese while he was in captivity.
Yeah.
And I don't want to blame someone too much if they can't resist threats, but I will tell you that there were a lot of American pilots who died under torture rather than make these propaganda clips for the North Vietnamese communists.
That's right. It's always been a criticism leveled at him, understandably. Well, I shouldn't say understandably, because I've never had to witness or experience the things you did. I'm mindful of the fact that I know you've plenty to do. I'm delighted you've come on the programme. I've got a final question for you, and I'd love you to come back any time you have time, Senator. You're welcome back on this programme. We're delighted to hear you here in the UK and across Europe. Is democracy, is it now redundant? I mean, we talk about these elites and these oligarchs. Every time we go to the polls, we end up, now I'm not talking about you in Virginia, you're an absolute godsend, but there just aren't enough of you. We go to the polls and we're given a choice between two billionaires who have sold out to corporate interests and corporate entities. For me, it's the definition of fascism. How can we say we live in a democracy when we get to choose between people that are given to us by the system, and those people have nothing in common with us, and they're not serving us? So I'm not an anarchist, I'm not a communist, but I believe democracy is redundant. What do you think?
Well, it certainly is under enormous threat. And I will tell you that democracy, free government, as we know it in the United States, was hanging by a thread during the last presidential election. And I sat up late until about 3 a.m. with a couple of the icons of the conservative movement, with Morton Blackwell and Richard Viguerie. And each time we knew that the only way that Trump could win was to thread the needle. Everything had to go perfectly. And one by one, each thread would pass through the needle. And at the end, around 3 a.m, we looked at each other and we said, my gosh, he's won. And this is Richard Viguerie. He's about 85, I think. And he reached in his desk drawer and he pulls out a box with Chivas Regal. He says, boys, he says, I think it's time that we broke out the good stuff.
Right.
And he lined up water glasses. And I have never had so much Chivas Regal in my life. But I've got to say, if you're going to overdo it, an election like that was the time to do it, because it has given us a chance. It's just like Brexit has given
us a chance. But if I can be so bold, just before we part company, you're a rarity, and I'm not blowing smoke up your backside. You're a rarity. It's up to you and people like you to hold him to account, because the media, forget the mainstream media, but even the independent media have weighed in behind Donald Trump. It's up to you. If you see him surrounding himself with bankers and neocons, and if he rolls back on promises, you know, we trust the rare men and women like you that you'll hold him to account and you won't support him. But I'm insulting your intelligence by saying that anyway, because where you see issues with Trump, you'll have the courage, of course, to speak about those issues, no doubt.
Yes, we will do that now. But keep in mind, here's the problem: when he proposes cabinet members, they have to be approved, and the important ones, from our standpoint, are the ones who have to go through the Senate Armed Services Committee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. There's an enormous degree of corruption among some of the senators on those committees. And he must get these people approved by these very bad committees. And so it's not that he doesn't want to put hardcore people in there, but he's got to get them confirmed. And so I think in his heart, I have come to believe with some skepticism at first, I think he believes essentially everything he says. He believes it's true. He believes he wants to do it. And we're going to have to see how much he can achieve and how much, you know, he's rallying the people. The people are, you know, he just had a meeting in Tennessee where there were 9,000 people who poured out. There was a line that went a mile and a half long, people waiting to get in. And, of course, many people couldn't get in. But it's this way everywhere. People want to hear a leader who will express the will of the people. And he is that person. And I think I think there is hope where there wasn't hope a year or two ago.
I hope I'm wrong, Senator. And I'll be the first to admit if I am. And I hope that he follows through. I'll be jumping up and down with joy if he holds true to his promise to stabilize relations with Russia and to roll and move away from US interventionism. Do you know, it was a tonic speaking with you today. It's made my day, Senator. Thank you. I want to tell our listeners, do follow the Senator on Twitter. His handle is @SenRichardBlack. It really was an honour, Senator, and I'd love to have you back on again in the future when you had some time. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
It was a pleasure. The lovely Senator Richard Black on the line to us there from Virginia. Terrific to get his thoughts on Syria, on Russia and on Donald Trump as well. It's 4 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. We are, of course, broadcasting on Fab Radio 2 and alternatecurrentradio.com. And coming up later at 2 a.m. Oh, hang on. The clocks went forward in the United States, didn't they? Hesher, in the unlikely event that you're listening, because you might be preparing your show later on, confirm for me that your programme will be at the slightly earlier time of 1 a.m. UK time. That's the Boiler Room, which is live on alternatecurrentradio.com. It goes out every Thursday. A terrific show, that's the Boiler Room. But go to alternatecurrentradio.com anyway, and you'll get the times, and you can figure out the local time yourself. I don't need to hold your hand. Thanks to Bass Ninja, who was very interested in what Senator Richard Black had to say. Hi to Sue, who's having coffee with work friends, who she considers to be reasonably intelligent, but she just honestly despairs sometimes. That must be to do with something to do with the independent media. Heraclitus says the senator sounds like a genuine altruistic human being. He certainly does, Heraclitus, no doubt about that. Hi to Mike Morrison. GP Brown says McCain was a general's son and was flown by the Vietnamese to Russia for operations on his injuries. Now, it's funny enough, isn't it? I read history, but the stories, the personal stories, I don't know too many of them. I knew McCain was captured. I knew that many veterans didn't like him because he made those propaganda films for the North Vietnamese, but I didn't know about him being flown to Russia at all. Hi to David Dondre, to Faisal, to Terry Harcott as well. Anybody I missed out, Luga as well. Keep those tweets coming in. Paul Jackson makes a good point. While the Saudis' human rights record is deplorable, in the United States, the electric chair has been used and lethal injection is still used. You're absolutely right to make that point. 100% right to make that point. No society that straps a man or a woman to a table, to a chair, or sticks them in a gas chamber can consider itself to be civilised. I wholeheartedly agree with that. But I do often tell a story, though, about an old friend of mine who happened to be in Saudi Arabia on business, God love him. This is a true story, around about 11 years ago, and happened upon a state-sanctioned beheading. I'm not making it up. Happened upon it in a square and witnessed it and spent a long time thereafter in therapy. And that's not funny, that. I mean, I can't. I've seen some of these videos on LiveLeak.com in the past and elsewhere, and they've left me sick to my stomach. The first time I saw one of these videos, it made me ill, physically ill. Witnessing something like that, seeing it, I can't imagine it. We're approaching the top of the hour. This is Thursday's Richie Allen Show, broadcasting, of course, on the platforms I mentioned a minute ago. I'm going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I have a few things to tell you, and we're going to be speaking with Tommy Sheridan. I can't wait for that. Looking forward to chatting with Tommy. One of the things Tommy did many years ago was he spent some time in jail for opposing the poll tax. We like people like that. We like activists. Colourful character is Tommy. We'll talk about the future, maybe the second Scottish independence referendum, the European Union. We'll talk about Rupert Murdoch and his bid, News Corp's bid, to take over all of B Sky B. We'll talk about that as well. And we'll talk about freedom of the press with Tommy Sheridan in our two.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic. They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premilanpictures.co.uk.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the programme. Good evening to Buzz. Buzz, how are you doing? Buzz mentioned on Twitter, he said, Richie, do mention that 14 years ago today, Rachel Corrie was murdered protecting Gaza people, Gazans, from bulldozers. She was. And last year, her parents were on this programme. They came on and told her story. A remarkable woman was Rachel, incredibly intelligent. She had everything going for her. Wonderful, wonderful woman. She came to Gaza as part of a college assignment, and while there she was murdered, again by a bulldozer driven by an IDF soldier, deliberately murdered. There's no doubt about that. And it was terrible. It was a dreadful, dreadful thing. Nobody has ever been brought to account for it. And it happened 14 years ago today. So thanks for the mention of that. I did see a mention of it today, and I meant to make a note of it, and I didn't. So thank you for reminding me of that. I really appreciate that. Right, it's 5 minutes past the hour. Going to be got some interesting guests lined up for you next week. Let me grab the diary. Excuse me. Talking off mic, dead air is not good, is it? It's the sort of thing can get you fired in radio, dead air. Yeah, it's got some really interesting guests. I think we'll have Gerald Celente back on the show next week. He's going to be speaking in Ireland, Gerald. I think it might be in Galway. Might be in Galway. Could be Limerick. I think it's Galway. Gareth Porter is a terrific investigative journalist. He's going to be on the show on Monday. Dr. Rima Labo is going to be on the show. She's had a difficult time of it of late, of course. General Baird's double bind. Her husband, her life partner, her soulmate, passed away a short time ago. As you know, he had a good innings, Bert, and he died after a short illness. Fascinating man. We were lucky to have him on the programme just over a year ago. But Rima will be on the programme on Monday. And there's some other good guests in the pipeline as well for next week on Your Richie Allen Show. Of course, broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Do bookmark that website and do visit theworldwidewakeup.com. Find out where David is going to be speaking on the tour this year, because if you get a chance to go and see him, I can't stress enough, I recommend it beyond, I can't find the words strong enough. He is in Slovenia at the moment. He's there leading up to his appearance there on Saturday. I mentioned earlier on, huge media interest in Slovenia. There's a number of interviews there. They have been shared on David's YouTube channel. If you want to see those, do check those out. So, in a couple of minutes, Tommy Sheridan joins me. Any questions for Tommy, any comments, do tweet them to @RichieAllenShow. Tweet them to @RichieAllenShow. Incidentally, you can follow Tommy on Twitter. His Twitter handle is @CitizenTommy. That's @CitizenTommy. Should be a really interesting chat, and we'll get him on the line in a couple of seconds. Before that, though, I've got some music for you.
And the going gets tough. The tough get going. Tough. When the going gets tough, the tough get rough.
On the Richie Allen Show, 9 minutes past the hour for Thursday, 16th of March, 2017. Let's welcome our next guest to the show. And delighted we are that he's agreed to come on. How do you quantify him? Well, he's a politician, a broadcaster, an activist. Mentioned earlier on his campaigning against the poll tax many years ago. And maybe he wouldn't mind me calling him an agitator. That's no bad thing. He's a former member of the Scottish Parliament. That's right. And I said it earlier and I mean it. I admire him for standing up to the criminal poll tax. He went to prison for that. People should never forget that. We're going to chat today about the future of Scottish independence, the European Union. We'll talk about freedom of the press as well, and a little bit about Rupert Murdoch. Why not? Because that's topical today. You can follow him on Twitter, and do follow him on Twitter. It's at Citizen Tommy. Let's welcome to the programme for the first time, Tommy Sheridan. Tommy, welcome to the show. Hi. How are you?
How's it going, Richie? Can you hear me okay, mate?
I can hear you loud and clear. I hope you're getting us strong as well.
I'm getting you guys loud and clear, and that was a very kind intro that you gave me. You reminded me of the poll tax days when I had a full set of hair. That was a long time ago, unfortunately, Richie. My my 11-year-old daughter doesn't believe that I once had long, flowing locks of hair, but I drag out all the poll tax photos to show her, and she says it's not me, you know, but there you go.
But it is you. You know what's remarkable? About the time that you were going to prison for standing up to the tyrannical poll tax, in my city of Waterford in the southeast of Ireland, there was a serious struggle going on over water rates at the time. And there was an incident in my town that got international attention. And I was thinking of you today when I was thinking about it. Men were coming into communities that were hard up, and they were turning off people's water supplies, right? And you remember this. And
I remember it.
You remember
it. There was a fantastic campaign against it. I mean, and the communities that were affected, if I can recall, got very much involved. And there was a guy called Joe Higgins who was much involved as well. And I think he went on to be elected to the Parliament on the back of his anti-water charge campaigning.
That's right. That's right. And I remember in Waterford, the community came together and it made international news. They surrounded a van where there was men in the van and they were turning off water and they were being rude to people and they were laughing at people. And they surrounded the van and kept these guys in the van for nearly 2 days. And it nearly turned very ugly and it was bad. But in the end, the men were unharmed. But I often think about, this was pre-social media, pre-mobile phones, pre-the distractions, a time when people would come together and stick up for one another. And I'm going to put this to you straight away before we talk European Union. And I'm not trying to depress you, Tommy. Are the days when working men and women will come together to do stuff together by force of numbers, are we seeing the end of those days?
Richie, I don't think so. I don't believe that to be the case. I do believe it can be difficult for men and women who are up to their necks in all sorts of debts, whether it be housing debts or whether it be holiday debts or whether it be car debts. And they're very, very worried about taking industrial action in case they lose their jobs. You've got an economy which is run on credit. I mean, if you looked at the levels of credit just now, it is absolutely remarkable. And really, it's a bubble that's going to burst again. We're almost back to pre-2008 situation. And I think there's another economic crash on the horizon. We've had the longest period, Richie, of sustained cuts in real wages since the 20th century, and you know that's biting into people's living standards. But people are worried about taking action in case they lose what they've got, and you know fear can be a great incapacitator. You know it can cause people not to do things that they think's right because they're frightened of the consequences. And sometimes, Richie, I mean, poll tax is an example. Way back in the late 80s, early 90s. I've got to say loud and clear here, it wasn't Tommy Sheridan or anybody else that was the biggest recruiting sergeant for the anti-poll tax campaign. It was poverty that was the biggest recruiting sergeant for the anti-poll tax campaign. People could not afford to pay the extra charge, and they were looking for a way out. They were looking for a battle. All people like me did was provide a focal point, provide someone at the microphone. Instead of there being an empty microphone, we went up to the microphone and we said, hey, let's stick together, let's have mass non-payment, let's stop the sheriff officers and don't be terrorised any longer. I don't think that the days of that are gone forever. I do think there are wonderful examples. I know you've got the Jobstown campaign in Ireland just now, which is you know, the Jobstown Not Guilty campaign is a big, big campaign. And I think a lot of people are involved with that as well. But all over the planet, Richie, that there are people standing up all the time and they don't always get the publicity they deserve. And let's face it, the mass media, the mainstream media, they do their job to make sure that we only get to see what they want us to see.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Tommy Sheridan is on the line, quarter past the hour this Thursday. Thrilled that he's on. Tommy, but the nature of this programme, you know who we are, and it's a credit that you'll come on and talk to us. Not every politician will. A lot of politicians do, but a lot don't. They say, oh, you're crazy conspiracy theorists. They won't talk to us. So it's your credit that you'll come on and have a chat with us. I campaigned against I said I would never vote for the UK to stay in the European Union because I believe centralisation of power is terrible, and so many other things that I'm not going to get into here. Now, you said many times that the European Union was anti the working man, the working woman, and you understood and said why it might be best for us not to be in it. But you also, of course, campaigned for Scottish independence, and I wholeheartedly support that. Why wouldn't Scottish men and women want to be independent of the Crown? But what Nicola Sturgeon is saying is, it can't be described as anything other than silly and bizarre and nonsensical. To want to gain independence from London, but then to hand it over to the bureaucrats of the European Union and put Scotland in the firing line where what happened to Greece, Spain, Italy, Ireland would undoubtedly happen to Scotland. She's mad. Now tell me this, you're in Scotland, right? Is the support for the European Union, as far as you understand it in Scotland, is it as great as we are being led to believe by the BBC and by Sky News?
Richie, it's an interesting question, mate, and obviously I was among those who campaigned for leaving the European Union, as you've said. I've got to state categorically I was very much involved with the trade unionists against the European Union campaign and not the knuckle-dragging, immigrant-hating, Farage-like characters who want to blame somebody else for all of the world's problems instead of blaming big business and the rich for the problems. I mean, I've got to laugh, you know, for people like Farage come across as anti-establishment. The guy is the establishment. You know, this is a public schoolboy, educated, millionaire stockbroker who then wants to stand up for the working class. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't make it up. If you saw it in a film, you'd say, oh, that script's far too mad. You couldn't follow it. So from my point of view, the European Union as an institution is fundamentally anti-socialist, anti-democratic, overly bureaucratic. I want an independent Scotland, Richie.
Completely independent. And that means independent of the UK, independent of any organisation like the EU. I hope we've not lost Tommy, have we? Are you there, Tommy? Ah, we might have lost him momentarily. Tell you what we'll do. We'll reconnect with him. And I'll do that now. I won't take any music because I don't want to waste any more time than I have to. Let's see, can we get him back on now? We lost you momentarily, Tommy. Sorry about that.
I don't know what happened, Richie. It's a landline as well, so it should be okay, but there you go.
Yeah, you just dropped out.
Probably MI5, mate.
It could be MI5, you never know. Listen, you were right in the middle of, it was brilliant. You said you don't want Scotland to be part of a European Union which is fundamentally undemocratic, and then you got cut off in your prime, so carry on.
What I would advise anyone with a semblance of interest in this question should go and look at the Copenhagen Treaty. And the Copenhagen Treaty sets out the rules of engagement and membership of the European Union. And one of the fundamental rules is that not only do you have a free market economy, but that you promote a free market economy. In other words, the European Union over this last two decades has been the major driver of privatization of public services all across Europe. They have dripped dry all of our public services, from railways to postal services. I don't want to be a member of that particular union. I want to be an independent country that decides, for instance, in relation to wind, wave and solar power, that we want it to be publicly owned and controlled so that we can properly invest in it and develop it, and we can have an alternative to fossil fuel, and we can actually gain money for society rather than for private shareholders. And from my point of view, the Brussels bureaucracy would turn around to a question like that and say, oh no, I'm sorry, you can't publicly own that. That would be anti-competitive.
That's
well,
right.
I'm sorry, mate. Once you've elected your government to do certain things, they should be allowed to get on with it.
Tommy, nobody could argue with that. That's absolutely spot on. You know, the economist Steve Keane was on the programme last night, and Steve acknowledged that what has happened to the European countries, particularly the southern European countries, and then, of course, the Republic of Ireland, is that he acknowledged that it was modus operandi for the central banks to get these countries up to their necks in debt to then take the real wealth. Now, we get called conspiracy theorists here. I said privately to Steve, you know, before we spoke yesterday, I said there was a time when you would have been called a conspiracy theorist for saying that. And he said, well, whether I would or not, that's the way it's been. That's what's happened to these countries. I mean, there isn't anything left in Ireland. Every state asset is gone. It's the same in Greece. And if Scotland were to join the European Union, there would be, in my opinion, and feel free to shoot me down if I'm wrong, but in my opinion, there would be a brief period of apparent prosperity. Loads of money for everybody. And then that boom followed by a massive bust, right?
I'm not even sure we would get that wind that you guys got for a wee while, because things across the European Union are so brutal now and so centralised in favour of the big markets. There's one example, and this may not mean a lot to all of your listeners, Richie, but for anyone in Scotland, this will mean a lot. There's one example of what the European Union means. We have got a ferry company called Caledonian McBrain, and this ferry company services all of the islands of Scotland. We're an island country. We're a country that's made up of several islands, and it's a publicly owned company. And in order for us to meet European rules, 7 years ago, we were forced as a country to put those services out to tender in order to allow the free market an opportunity. Now, it cost over £1 million, and Caledonian McBrain won the tender anyway. But the point is, that's a lifeline service, and the European Union dictated, no, it'd be anti-competitive, you have to put it out to tender. That is just nonsense, Richie. And see, when it comes to things like gas, electricity, water, for God's sake, who on earth thinks those should belong to private shareholders instead of belonging to the people? Those services should belong to the people, and anything made from those services should be put into schools and hospitals and roads and social services, not into the pockets of the fat cats.
You know, yesterday afternoon, our studio is actually, it's built in a house in South Manchester. And it's a recent development. It's a wonderful thing, and we live right next door to it, and we got a letter in the post the other day, 15% increase on your gas and electricity, right across the board. It doesn't matter who your provider is. Now my fiance Tommy, she's got a decent job. We do okay here at the radio show. People think we do better than we do because we have an enormous audience. We don't brag. People think we're rolling in it. We're not. It's an independent radio show. We don't have the sorts of sponsorship that people think, you know, that we might have. We don't have it. But we're okay, my future missus and I. We're just about okay. But I met a guy the other morning, and he was white in the face. And you talked at the very beginning of this about people being on the margins. And I said, I'm what's up with you? And he got the same letter. And he said, Richie, I'm not making it up. That's going to crucify us, that. Our electricity bill's gone up by 15%. We can barely make it as it is. And this particular friend is looking after a senior relative. I mean, Tommy, and there's nobody going to argue with that. There's nothing you can do about that. Either you pay or you don't pay. And if you don't pay, you have no heat, you have no light. 15%, just like that.
But, Richie, the thing that really upsets me, brother, is we have a political landscape. You've got programmes like Question Time that will be on the BBC later tonight. And you've got a political landscape that is the equivalent of four baldy men fighting over a brush. Because the truth is, they're all telling you the same thing. Not one of them is saying, by the way, it's wrong that electricity is privately owned. It's wrong that gas is privately owned. It's wrong that our water is privately owned. When are we going to get real alternatives? For God's sake, we used to own these things. They used to be part of our national wealth, our national treasure. Thatcher stole them from us. And as far as I'm concerned, it's way beyond the time that we take these things back, along with telecommunications, along with transport, and we run them for the good of the people, not for the enrichment of the few. That's a perspective that isn't getting put on the political landscape, unfortunately.
What about Jeremy Corbyn? Because Corbyn ran on this basic platform, and he got this massive mandate down here, and people weighed in behind him. And programmes like ours were heavily criticised for not endorsing him or supporting him. And I said at the time, look, because I'm a very easygoing guy, Tommy, I'm not the most domineering guy in the world. You know, I have a platform and I express my opinion sometimes, but I'm not domineering about it. But at the time I said, look, I don't believe that Corbyn is going to be able to achieve the things that he's saying he wants to achieve, because I'm not convinced of his commitment to it. You know, it's an easy thing to say when you're on the back benches. You know, we should own the telecommunications companies.
Richie,
we should own this.
What happened to him, Jeremy? I met Jeremy way back in 1989 when I was a young whippersnapper down in Parliament trying to get the campaign group of MPs to back the mass non-payment campaign. I had the pleasure to meet with Tony Benn, with Jeremy Corbyn, Dennis Skinner, with Terry Fields, with Dave Nellis. We're trying to get these guys to back the mass non-payment campaign, and he backed it. He was one of our strongest supporters. And if you go through Jeremy's political life, Richie, you will find, in my opinion, that he's been on the right side of our class on all of the big questions throughout the last 25, 30 years. He's, even when it was unpopular, to support the Birmingham 6, when it was unpopular to support the Gulf of 4, people like Jeremy Corbyn were sticking their necks out and saying that miscarriage of justice had been done. So as an individual, I think Jeremy Corbyn is genuine. What I worry about, and this is the rub here, how can he ever succeed in a party that has half of them have got knives sharpened, stabbing them in the back at every turn? He really needs to have a clear out of that political party. That party, if it really genuinely wants to be a socialist party, has to get rid of the blue Tories, the Blairites, who couldn't give a damn about public ownership or working class life. All they're interested in is feathering their own nests.
I can't argue with that. I believe that he was sincere over the years. I knew, you know, the criticism he came in for meeting with Sinn Féin leaders in Belfast and elsewhere. I couldn't disagree with much or any of the positions and opinions expressed by Corbyn over the years. My misgivings about him were twofold. I agree with you. He had the Blairites in his own party to deal with, and I don't know if deselection is possible for him. I don't know if he has the energy for it after the last 2 years. I don't know if the unions support him as much as they say they support him. But as well as that, entrainment is an interesting term, isn't it? Entrainment, you know, vibrated into line. I just don't know, Tommy. I really don't.
You know what?
Do we live in a democracy?
I think we could both agree that the guy, as a man, is someone I could trust. He's not somebody who I think... He's not a Tony Blair, put it that way. He's not a Gordon Brown. He's not somebody who's going to say one thing and not mean it. Where Jeremy probably, and I hope he doesn't mind, and I suppose, you know, who am I to offer such advice? But from my point of view, Jeremy, throughout his political career, has always been a soldier. He's always been, as I say, on the front line. He might not have been a natural leader, and he might lack just a wee bit of the charisma that sometimes is required. Jeremy doesn't like sound bites, and I can understand why he doesn't like sound bites, because politics should be more than sound bites.
Yeah.
But sometimes in this horrible media 24/7 world that we live in, sometimes you need to be able to swim with those particular sharks, and he's maybe got to work a wee bit more on that. But to me, he is hamstrung. He's in the boxing ring fighting these people, and his problem is his own corner is throwing punches at him. That's just a major, major handicap.
Let me do a quick recap. I want to talk about Murdoch in a second. And thanks for your time, Tommy. We'll keep you, if you don't mind, for another 10 minutes or thereabouts.
Richard, the only thing is, I'm amazed that you're going away with swearing as much as you're swearing, because that's three times I've heard you mention Murdoch. You know, I can't understand.
In Murdoch, yeah. Well, there's no better man to talk about the Murdoch Empire and his newspapers than you. I'm just going to do a quick recap. If you've just joined us, the politician, the broadcaster, and the activist, the socialist, Tommy Sheridan is on the line to us. It's great to have him on the programme. Former member of the Scottish Parliament, of course. And now we turn to Rupert Murdoch. Now, I've been talking for years, including in my commercial radio days, about Murdoch's attempt to take over in its entirety, to take over BSkyB. I remember lamenting Jeremy Hunt staying in his job as Culture Secretary when he was appointed by David Cameron, specifically appointed to that job because Hunt favoured Murdoch getting all of BSkyB. If that wasn't corruption, if that didn't bring down the government, nothing possibly could. But it didn't, of course, and Hunt is the Health Secretary now. It's madness to me, Tommy. You know, I went through uni, I worked in commercial and national media, radio, TV, doing my own thing now. The idea that it's even been discussed that this guy and News Corps should be allowed own so much of the media landscape in this country, and there is little or no condemnation of it. Feel free to unload. Go ahead.
Richard, the point you made about Jeremy Hunt and his appointment, we have to bear in mind that the only reason Murdoch didn't get his mitts on the entirety of Sky B all those years ago was because he was caught, because of the phone hacking scandal.
That's right.
That's what stopped the bid in its tracks. What we have to now say is what's changed. What's changed? This man was in charge of, as the QC at Leveson called it, a thoroughly criminal enterprise. Thoroughly criminal enterprise. These people were above the law. They never just hacked phones. They hacked computers. They bought off police officers. They bought off judges. They bought off prison officers. These people have dragged journalism into a sewer. They are a cancer in society. That's what the Murdoch Empire represents, a cancer, a horrible cancer that eats away at the fabric of society. How can you have an individual who has been in charge, like a mafia don, in charge of a thoroughly criminal enterprise, now be on the verge of controlling such a vast network as the whole of Sky News and the Sky Corporation? It is simply insane, Richie. It has to stop. There has to be a criminal investigation, and if the forces of law and order want some evidence, I've got it in abundance. I've got absolute tirades of emails here in my own house of the type of criminality that these guys have been involved in, from perjury to subornation of perjury to perverting the course of justice, all done in the name of News Corporation. And the question is, why, oh why, has News Corporation never been criminally held to account? They've got away with criminality on an industrial scale, and because they're big and powerful and because the politicians are scared of them, than they've been able to get away with it, Richie.
And they've owned them.
Sick, mate.
Yeah, you're right. And listen, you know, I should be at some stage, I should be weighing in and playing the devil's advocate. But, you know, arse to that, because there's no arguing with that sentiment there. And then, you know, you talk about his relationship with a succession of British prime ministers and chancellors and other ministers. And we're not talking about, you know, an informer. We're talking about a very, a very almost incestuous relationship that Murdoch and his minions have had with successive governments in this country. I want to talk about where that relates to what I see as the coming attack on the press, because people listening to Tommy Sheridan shouldn't be fooled and think that Tommy is in some way in favour of impinging on the freedom of the press. Not at all, far from it, he isn't. And I don't have to defend him, he'll speak for himself in a minute here. But we segue into Max Mosley and this tyrannical idea that you sign up for Mosley's rules and regulations and his regulatory body, and if you don't, we'll screw you. And if somebody takes you to court for libel, win, lose or draw, you as a newspaper, regardless of how big or how small you are, you might have to pay their costs as well. This is a terrifying outlook for me, Tommy. However bad these newspapers are, and they have been dreadful, you know. But what they're proposing as a kind of a fix for this is worse. It's unimaginable, really. Go ahead.
Richie, I think when there is a vacuum, something will fill it. And obviously there is a vacuum as far as press regulation is concerned. You know, I find it very, very funny when I hear the press barons, most of them tax-evading press barons that live in foreign countries but want to have a go at so-called benefit scroungers when they're dodging their taxes. I find it funny when they say that they're against regulation. You can't sell ice cream in Glasgow without being regulated. You can't drive a taxi in Glasgow without being regulated. Why the hell should you be able to sell a newspaper and not be regulated? There needs to be some form of regulation. There is a difference between regulation and control. Obviously, we need newspapers to be able to always find out what the rich and powerful are up to. Not in the bedrooms. I couldn't give a damn what they're doing in the bedrooms. What I want to know is what they're doing in the boardrooms. That's where the real damage gets done. That's where the real deals are getting done. That's where the real rip-offs are taking place. So from my point of view, newspapers have to try and get with it. The idea that newspapers can look after themselves and have their own regulation, I'm sorry, I don't agree with the police. The police think that they can regulate themselves. I don't agree with that. I think there should be independent regulation of the police service. And similarly in relation to the press, there has to be independent regulation so that when newspapers target somebody and tell lies about somebody, you don't get an apology in page 52 underneath the incontinence pad advert. You get an apology in the front page. You get the same prominence of apology as you got with the story that attacked you in the first place. I think the newspapers have got away with murder for far too long, Richie.
They have.
The difficulty without a reasonable regulatory independent body to be put in its place, inevitably somebody else is going to fill that vacuum, whether it's Max Mosley or anybody else.
That's the key word, of course, independent. By the way, the incontinence pads ad, I'll have that in my brain all night long. Thanks for that. But you're right. Listen, of course I'm not suggesting that they just, you know, have a Wild West type arrangement. No, of course not. But what Mosley is proposing is control. It's not regulation. That's the problem I have with that. But I'm not, I don't want to be given the wrong impression. I don't think they should be allowed to act. I don't think I should be able to go on here and make allegations
or say things about people. Anything we do in life, let's face it, Richie, anything we do in life, you know, quite frankly, we've got laws. And freedom of speech is something that you and I would fight to our dying breath to defend. But along with freedom of speech comes responsibilities as well. And we it would be wrong for us to incite hatred and to incite violence. The difficulty with some of these newspapers, if you look at what they have done, the Daily Mail, the Sun, the News of the World before it was closed down, the Sunday Sun now, they effectively ferment the type of atmosphere which leads to attack on immigrants, on people that are different. People that are different. And I think we should promote a society which celebrates differences, isn't frightened of differences. For God's sake, what a horrible world, Richie, it would all be if we're all the same. So from my point of view, in the absence of some form of independent regulator, the papers have got far too much power. I've had occasion to take cases to that IPCC thing. And come on, it's as useful as a bloody chocolate teapot.
Yeah, it's failed. You're right.
The idea that they're regulating papers is just rubbish.
You're right. You're 100% right. Look, I'm not going to defend that. And when I worked in commercial radio in the past, you know, we were subject to various regulatory bodies, and those bodies weren't worth the paper that, you know, that they were dreamt up on either. I totally agree with that. But the state can't have any part in it. And I think we both agree with that, you know.
The broadcasters are much more tightly regulated than the newspapers. And yet, the newspapers, in many respects, have got just as much power, if not more.
Do you know,
so
I have,
why are they not as tightly regulated?
I have one. Look, when you talked about the News of the World, and of course in Ireland we had the Sunday World, you remember that newspaper. Listen, you categorised them and you described them perfectly. But, and I'm not being the devil's advocate here, in amongst all that crap and that harassment of people like you, it must be said, you know, and nobody could condone that, amongst all of that, we did have, in some, and I hate the Sun and Murdoch and what they did to Liverpoolians in the wake of Hillsborough. I mean, they're disgusting. But amongst that scum, let's call them what they are, there was some wonderful investigative journalism done, Tommy.
I think investigative journalism should be separated from these papers. I mean, what you get in terms of investigative journalists, I mean, one of my biggest icons and heroes is John Pilger. And you'll not get a better investigative journalist than John Pilger. He's absolutely fabulous. And
top
any
man,
of your listeners who haven't read any of John Pilger, please go and look him up and please read his stuff. It's absolutely fantastic. But investigative journalism won't die the day that we get rid of the last Murdoch newspaper. If anything, in my opinion, it will thrive. Because then people will be investigating the genuinely rich and powerful rather than trying to upset some celebrity or get some tidbits on who's sleeping with who and all the rest of it. Things which, quite frankly, are a pile of pish and really don't fit with a proper, responsible newspaper.
You're absolutely right. Stuff that is of no consequence. Just 2 points. The listeners are tweeting like mad here. And if you want later on, Tommy, I mean, you probably have much better things to be doing. But if you have a look through the tweets that have come in, a lot of really interesting tweets there, a lot of really good points.
I'll definitely look up, mate.
Yeah, really good stuff. 2 points that they want to take both of us up on. One, I'm getting harangued because I should have jumped at you. Allegedly, I should have jumped on you about Corbyn's flip-flop on the European Union. And look, I've done that to death. I've criticised Corbyn inside out for his criticism of the EU. And
Richie,
then he's flip-flop
on it. I was disappointed, mate. I was disappointed, but you know what? I think he's a prisoner of his party.
Prisoner of his own party. And the second thing is listeners are saying they don't disagree with Tommy's defence of ethnic minorities. No minority should be targeted, should be humiliated, should be put in a position of embarrassment because of where they come from. But people who are concerned about immigration having a real profound and a negative effect on services shouldn't be equated with the knuckle draggers that you talked about earlier on. And I endorse that because
Listen, my only disagreement with individuals who will make an argument about they're worried about immigration or they're worried about people coming to live and work in a country. First and foremost, let's be absolutely clear. Every single economic assessment of immigration shows the immigrants put more into the economy than they take out the economy. That's just a fact. It just can't be denied. So from a global point of view, it is wrong to suggest that immigration actually is a drain in resources. They actually pay more in taxes and national insurance, and they put more into the economy. The problem is when we attack immigrants, Richard, when we're fearful of immigrants, the problem is we let the rich off the hook. We don't have a problem with services because of immigration or immigrants. We have a problem with service provision because the rich don't pay their bloody taxes. That's the problem.
It's very hard to argue with that when you look at the money. I mean, John McDonald was on the Andrew Marr BBC Sunday morning programme a couple of weeks ago, and he had a couple of A4 pages with him, and he was able to point to specific examples of massive corporate tax avoidance schemes. And when he rolled out the actual money that hadn't been paid into the tax purses, for want of a better way of putting it, it actually supported what you just said there.
The Public and Commercial Services Trade Union commissioned a major study into tax evasion, tax avoidance, and they calculated that the amount of money lost to the Exchequer every single year is £120 billion a year. £120,000 million a year. See if we got the rich corporations, if we got the Starbucks of the world, if we got these major corporations, like News Corporation, to pay their bloody taxes, we wouldn't be talking about cuts in services, we would be talking about expanding services.
Yeah, there'd be a surplus, not a deficit.
Exactly.
There'd be a surplus. Listen, the last thing I'll say to you on that is, look, we talk a lot about nationalism and you know, we talk about the pulling back from the centralisation of power, and we talk to people who say that, you know, celebrating nationalism is run down and it's put down, and people who celebrate nationalism are called xenophobic. And finally on that, and I'm giving you the final word on it, I'll just finish by saying this. You know, I suppose I'm going to be honest enough to say that I'm convinced that there is, we talk about this global elite all the time, and I think that one of the tools that the global elite has used against people like us is they have used divide and conquer. They've used it, and they've used mass migration to the detriment of the immigrants and the indigenous people to drive us against one another.
Definitely.
They have done, haven't they, Tommy? And we're idiots, and we fall out. And you know, I know people, and they're lovely people, Tommy. I know people who are lovely people, but they never stop talking about immigrants this, immigrants that, immigrants the other thing. And I think we all have it wrong. I think, well, you have it wrong. You shouldn't hate that person from Somalia or from Pakistan. You shouldn't do that. That person is here because of a direct result of the foreign policy of this government and governments in the United States, right?
That person's here because we bloody bombed those
absolutely
countries,
right.
Afghanistan
100%.
Or Syria or Iraq.
Yeah.
You know, this is what pisses me off. We hear people being anti-immigrant. I wish they'd be anti the politicians that bombed these countries in the first place.
Absolutely right. I'm so glad that you said that. You can consider that part of that global elite agenda is to divide us through that mass migration, knowing that rather than embrace one another and take on the bastards who do these things and bomb Yemen and bomb Syria, we'll fight each other over petty things like, well, you know, we don't get on, you wear a turban, I don't like you, you know, you go to a mosque, I can't stand you. And it works for them, doesn't it, Tommy? I'm giving you the final word on it.
You know more than anybody from your own background, divide and conquer works a treat. If you can get the working classes of Ireland fighting over religion, then you don't get them fighting over wage levels. You don't get them fighting over proper pensions. And that always works for the bosses, and it works on a global scale. What I would say, Richie, in terms of this whole nationalist argument, is there has got to be an understanding. There is nothing wrong with people being patriotic about where they live and where they come from and having a pride in their country. I've spent lots of years visiting Cuba, for instance, and the Cuban people are very, very proud of their country. They have got a patriotic pride in their country. But you know what? They are the best internationalist country in the planet, bar none, in terms of sending doctors and nurses and supplies to every grief-stricken part of the world to try and help others. So there's nothing wrong with having pride in your nation, but also being an internationalist.
Tell you what, mate, I really enjoy that. I'm disappointed we've come to the end. We're pretty much at the end of the programme. Tommy,
it's been a pleasure.
Well, we'll certainly be inviting you back again. Give us your WordPress site might be down temporarily.
It is, mate. Do you know what it is? I've not done a blog for ages. I've done my law degree and then I've done my law diploma and then I lost my father recently. So I've not been doing the blog stuff, Richie. I apologise for that. I put the odd tweet on and I keep them fighting for independence, and I'll keep that going and fighting for an independent socialist Scotland. That's my desire. That's my aim. My political inspiration is a guy called John McLean, Richie. And if any of the listeners go and look up John McLean, you'll see that he was an inspiring anti-First World War figure and a great Clydeside socialist. So
he's
the guy that will keep me going.
Well, listen, people can follow you on Twitter. It's @CitizenTommy. Get on there. Wonderful thing about Tommy is he'll talk to you. whether he agrees with you or disagrees with you. You don't get too many people like that. Narcissism reigns these days on social media. But Tommy will have an argument with you. Thanks for coming on, mate. I thoroughly enjoyed
that. Thanks, brother. It's been a pleasure, Richie.
Look after yourself. Bye for now. Tommy Sheridan on the line to us there from his home in Scotland. Great to have him on the programme. At Citizen Tommy there. I made your points. Loads of tweets on this. Do go to Richie Allen Show on Twitter and read what other people are saying and engage with them there. I made the point, we believe on this programme that the forced immigration, the mass immigration, is part of the elite, the global elite agenda. We believe that. It's to drive down services and cause chaos in countries. But Tommy is 100% right. And there's no disputing it. And I don't have any stock with politicians like John McDonnell. I don't believe in politics. But when McDonnell whipped out that piece of paper on the Andrew Marr show, and he said, "Well, in the political world, in the business world, in the so-called real world, these companies that don't pay corporation tax, that don't pay income tax, could pay for the vital services 10 times over if they were to pay their fair share and pay their way. Nothing is black and white." And I like to think that's what, and I don't want to come across as smug or arrogant, I'm not, but that's what separates us from much of, not all of, but much of the so-called independent media. It's not black and white. You know, there's no absolutes whatsoever. There are no absolutes whatsoever. I'm going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're just about going to have to wrap it up, I think, because we're running out of time. Back in a minute. Enjoyed that. Enjoyed both of our guests tonight.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic. They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2. Available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Welcome back to the programme then. It's coming up for 6.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Good to be with you. It's been a quick old show this Thursday. Big thanks to Tommy Sheridan there. And, of course, to Senator Richard Black earlier on. Two terrific guests. Really, really good stuff. It's been a different week. When I say indifferent, it's been a strange old week. Strange old week for the programme. Kind of stop start for me. Few things going on in the background. Ben Gilroy has not come back to me, by the way. A couple of you were saying, Richie, Ben Gilroy, Richie. He let us down badly earlier in the week and has ignored phone calls since. I have no idea why that is, and I couldn't give a damn, to be honest. He'll never be invited to come back on the programme again. Monumentally unprofessional, that. I have no idea what happened or why he didn't do it. People are entitled to change their mind. They're also entitled to have the courtesy to let you know that they don't want to come on your programme. So just to answer that, because I was tweeted a couple of times about that. Now, Ken O'Keefe. Now, this is the absolute final time that Ken O'Keefe will ever get a mention on this programme. That is a fact. I mentioned him today and I tweeted him today because I still get emails and I have them and I have archived them in case there's any questions. I get emails from people who donated to Ken's pyramid scheme, the One World Citizen contract, utter bollocks. Which I was asked to participate in just over a year ago and refused to because it's nonsense. Then I forgot all about it. And then the people working with Ken left him. Max Egan walked away from him. They said he was a liar and that none of it was happening and all of that. I invited him on the programme. I gave him an hour and 20 minutes to explain it. He didn't explain it. It was car crash radio. He exposed himself for the liar and the fraud that he is. Now, why is this the final time you'll ever get mentioned here? A number of people have been asking me to follow up on it. Richie, we can't get any answers. He won't answer us. He won't answer our emails. And I went on to his two Facebook pages and there are dozens and dozens of donors on there asking him for answers. And they haven't gotten any answers. So I tweeted him today to ask him why does he refuse not to answer me, because he doesn't have to answer to me. I didn't give him any money. But to ask him why was he not answering his donors and having the courage and the decency to explain why he's disappeared off the face of the earth and not spoken on social media or said anything in over 5 months. So I tweeted him today, I've emailed him in recent weeks. I didn't get an answer either. I am washing my hands of Ken O'Keefe. I'm done with him. No interest in him. And I'm sorry for those people who were foolish enough to give him money based on that ludicrous premise of One World Citizen garbage. But I'm done with it. And I won't be inviting him back on again in the future. There's no point in that. I'm genuinely sorry that people got taken in by it. That's all I'm saying on that. You and I will talk again on Sunday morning for Sunday View, 11 a.m. GMT. By the way, feel free to alert Ken O'Keefe. You might have more luck than me in asking him to answer, to have the manners and the decency to answer those people who gave him money. So if you want to do that, you can tweet him, you can email him. I'm done with him. I'll talk to you on Sunday at 11 a.m. GMT. Until then, thanks for listening. Thanks to Senator Richard Black. Thanks to Tommy Sheridan. Thanks to Simon, who's not well. Simon, get well soon, mate. He's had a rotten bug this week, Simon. He's been off work. He's not feeling well. I hope you're better soon, mate. Thanks for the YouTube work. And to Aaron Calland as well. Until next time, then. Thanks for listening. Look after yourselves and one another. I've been Richie Allen. Stay with our broadcast partners, Alternate Current Radio, Fab Radio, and David Icke. Bye now. Have all the time in the world. Time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all love in the world. If that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way will find us.
nothing less. Oh.